Yes, go ahead. I'd like to open up the meeting from October the 17th of the Inland Wetlands Commission. Sandra Bernardi, Joe Bernardi.
Here.
Ray.
Yes.
Doug, absent. Charlie Abde, here. Robert.
Yes, sir.
And Jessica.
Here. Okay.
Minutes of the last meeting of September the 19th.
I make a motion to approve the September 19th, 2024 regular meeting minutes.
Second it.
Okay. Motion has been made and seconded to accept the meeting minutes of the meeting of October or September the 19th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Public hearings. Public hearings?
No.
Nothing. Shows cause hearings? None. Remarks from the public not related to the items on the agenda. Remarks of the, from the public not related the items on the agenda. Remarks from the public not related to the items on the agenda. Okay. Old business, none. New business, 24 IWC 92268-2284, Route 32, partial ID 106-034-000, 106-036-000, 106-035-035-000. Uncasville, Connecticut. Owner, Samuels Montville, LLC. Application, Honeycomb Real Estate Partners, LLC, for regulating activities associated with the development of these parcels for the 57-unit multifamily residential projects with parking and stormwater management features.
Stacy Radford, Zoning and Wetlands Officer, for the record. This application is for regulated activities associated with the development of three parcels of land located on Route 32 and better known as 2268, 2280, and 2284 Route 32 for the construction of a 57-unit multifamily residential project with paved parking and stormwater management features. The applicant is seeking approval for 432 square feet of temporary and 636 square feet of permanent disturbance to an isolated inland wetland area associated with a stormwater outfall, along with 9,770 square feet of permanent disturbance in the associated upland review area. The applicant states that the wetland areas within 100 feet and streams within 200 feet of the study area were located and flagged by environmental consultant soil scientist Thomas Liddy of Lucas Environmental on July 19, 2024. The study area consists of three parcels, totaling approximately 3.4 acres of land broken down as follows. 1.43 acres, which makes up the southern half of the study area and now known as 2268 Route 32, parcel ID 106-034-000. 1.72 acres, which makes up the northern half of the study area and known as now known as 2284 Route 32, parcel ID 106-035-000. And .21 acres, which makes up the area between both of the aforementioned parcels and now known as 2280 Route 32, parcel ID 106036000. The applicant's soil scientist states that the wetlands located on the site are at the bottom of a rocky hillside, likely formed as a collection of surface outfall flows originated from an upgradient stormwater outfall located on Cedar Lane to the north of the proposed parcels. The applicant is proposing 432 square feet of temporary impacts to the wetlands related to minor regrading to allow for off-site stormwater to enter a proposed drainage pipe, 636 square feet of permanent impacts of wetlands resulting from the proposed construction of a retaining wall in a paved parking lot, and 9,770 square feet of disturbance in the upland review area for grading and additional drainage and paving associated with the proposed site improvements. The applicant soil scientist states it is his professional opinion that all of the proposed improvements to this site will correct a long-term drainage issue in this immediate neighborhood. The applicant attorney is here to speak if anyone has any questions for him.
Thank you very much, Stacy. Good evening. For the record, tonight my name is Bill Sweeney. I'm a land use attorney and a partner at the law firm of Tobin Carberry down in New London, Connecticut. And it's a pleasure to be here before you tonight. I appear before you on behalf of my client, Honeycomb Real Estate Partners, LLC, which has applied for the approval of certain regulated activities associated with a new 57-unit multifamily residential development on the three vacant parcels of land along Route 32 that your wetland officer has discussed previously. Honeycomb itself is a highly successful investor in and developer of affordable and mixed-income housing projects here in Connecticut. They're based in Avon, up in the Farmington Valley. And joining me tonight is Steve Caprio. Steve is a principal with the company. I also have with me tonight Tom Liddy. Tom Liddy is a wetland scientist and the project soil scientist with Lucas Environmental. And I also have Mark Pricer with me. He's a civil engineer with RJ and O'Connell and Associates. He's filling in tonight for his colleague, Roy Smith, who is ill. But Roy and Mark both worked on the design of the project that we're going to share with you tonight. Tonight is the night that you receive this application. And we're going to provide you a basic overview of the project. And I'm going to try to give you some background to help your deliberations. Mr. Liddy is going to review his work with you in assessing that small, isolated wetland on the northern edge of the property that your wetland officer discussed. He's going to discuss with you its very limited functional value, and he's going to provide his evaluation of the potential impact to the resource area as a result of the project. Mr. Pricer will walk you through the details of our site plan layout, the grading, the drainage, the utilities, and the engineering details related to the proposed wetland impact. And then I'm going to come back again tonight at the end of our presentation to discuss with you the regulated activities, again, that are in your jurisdiction and why we don't believe they rise to the level of a, quote, significant impact as defined by your regulations. As I mentioned before and as your wetland officer mentioned, this project site, which is shown on the board in front of you, is actually consists of three separate vacant parcels of land. They're west of Route 32, and to get you orientated, they're directly across the street from where Fort Chantock Road comes into Route 32. Some of you may recall that over a decade ago, this site was proposed for a pharmacy development that actually went through this commission, went through the Planning and Zoning Commission, but the project itself never moved forward. It never got built. But we're back here tonight before you with a proposal for a 57-unit, four-story, mixed-income apartment development that we're calling Horizon View. That horizon view will include 25 one-bedroom and 32 two-bedroom units, with all with high-quality finishes and amenities. The building itself, and while it's not directly related to the wetland application, I think it's important to note the building will be an Energy Star Emerald compliant building. It's going to have a variety of energy efficient features, high efficiency HVAC, superior insulated building envelope. It's going to have solar panels on the roof. Primary access to the site is off of Route 32, directly across from Fort Shantock Road. We have paved surface parking in front of the building, to the north of the building, and to the west of the building, totaling 132 spaces for the residents. The site is served by public water and sanitary sewer, so there's no septics or wells involved in this project. We have a detailed plan for stormwater management for the rear of the site, which Mr. Pricer will review with you during his presentation. Along the very northern edge of the project site, shown here on the map, along that northern edge is a small isolated wetland. It is fed by a drainage outfall. You're going to see pictures tonight of that outfall, basically a pipe coming out of the hillside that feeds off from another property and drains onto our property. That wetland is going to be discussed in great detail by Mr. Liddy during his presentation. That wetland and its 50-foot upland review area will be impacted by the development of this multifamily apartment project. As your wetland agent commented, there is proposed 432 square feet of temporary and 636 square feet of permanent disturbance to accommodate the parking lot north of the building. As we're going to discuss later when I come back, due to the scope of this disturbance and the limited functional value of the wetland, we don't believe that this activity constitutes a significant impact under your regulations, and therefore a public hearing is not required for this application. So at this point, what I'm going to do is have Mr. Liddy come up and talk to you about his work in assessing the wetland, get you acquainted with it, understand its functional values and the potential impacts to it. And then after that, we're going to have Mr. Pricer come up and really go into the detail of the engineered design for the project. Then I'll come back at the end of the presentation just for some concluding remarks. So thank you, Mr. Liddy.
Good evening. Just for the record, my name is Tom Liddy, professional wetland scientist from Lucas Environmental. I'm also a registered soil scientist, and I was retained by the applicant to delineate wetland resource areas, inland wetlands, and water courses on the subject property. I conducted a site investigation in July of this year and encountered what we've been discussing, an isolated wetland along the northern property line. Upon further investigation, it was determined that this wetland feature is a small pocket wetland, and there's a channel leading down to this wetland, and the origin of this water course or wetland appears to be a stormwater outfall, which is conveying and discharging stormwater from the Cedar Lane area. I have some photos I'd just like to show you of what the wetland looks like, and I'll get into a little more description after I do that. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do.
So what those photos show is the wetland located at the bottom of this slope. I'm just going to show you exactly where that is. This wetland is located here. Here's the northern property line. The wetland line is, oh, thank you. The wetland line is shown here in blue, and what you can see is there's a channel coming down this slope, and what happens is this is a pretty rocky till hillside, and then the water enters the site, and it's very flat, and the soils consist of sandy loam outwash material, so the water just accumulates and infiltrates into the ground. In the previous project that Bill mentioned, another soil scientist had encountered this exact same wetland and described it in the same way. And he described it as an area that was excavated out, presumably to contain some of this water that had been discharging. However, if you look at it today, it's accumulated with sediment presumably from all the stormwater from the town drainage system. In terms of vegetation, it's within a wooded area along the property line. The wetlands vegetated primarily with Phragmites, common reed, which if you're familiar with that plant, it's a highly invasive plant. There's a lot of bindweed, which is also invasive, multiflora rose. And if you go out there, there's Phragmites over much of this area, which is very common for it to grow in wetlands, but also in uplands, and even you'll see it growing out of sidewalks and broken up pavement. So as a soil scientist, what I would look for is evidence of transformation of minerals in the soil, specifically iron and manganese. And this line you see here is the limit of hydric soils, which is what we delineate wetlands on. So going out there, you'll see frag and a lot of other invasives above the wetland line. But that's not uncommon for that plant specifically. So in terms of function and value, the vegetative community, it's primarily invasives. The hydro period is quite short. It doesn't look like it stores water long enough to produce habitat for any kind of wetland dependent wildlife or amphibians, or and certainly not amphibian breeding or anything like that. So it's very much impacted by the stormwater that's coming through. It's actually, in my opinion, seems to be the result of the stormwater that's being discharged and settling there. So, however, it is that water is there at a sufficient duration to create hydric soils, which is what the limit of the wetland is. So, Bill mentioned, and staff mentioned, in terms of impacts, we're proposing 432 square feet of temporary impact, as well as 636 square feet of permanent impact associated with the parking lot. As far as what we're calling temporary, this area will be regraded because we need to deal with the stormwater that's coming onto this property. And Mark will get into that a little more detail of how we're dealing with that water. It's not water generated from this site, but it's being discharged to our site, so we have to deal with it. And basically what we're proposing to do is collect that water within this head wall into a pipe, and that will discharge to this sediment basin here. And this temporary area will be seeded with a wetland seed mix, and we're proposing 20 native shrubs plantings on either side of that wetland area. I just also wanted to mention that this site, there's no floodplain, no rare species habitat. We're not in an aquifer watershed or public water supply watershed. So in terms of wetland resource areas, this is it. And it's limited to this area. And that's all I have with that. I'll turn it over to Mark, and he can go into a little more detail on the proposed design.
For the record, I'm Mark Pricer, the civil engineer with RJOC, and we were tasked with the site design and stormwater management design for this project. I have a couple handouts I'd like to give you real quick.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll start with just a of the project itself. Start with a broad overview of the project just to help kind of get an idea of the design intent and why we're going to impact this wetland area. Starting with the entrance, we have the existing three-way or a T intersection over here. We're going to branch off of that, make that a four-way intersection for access into the site. The building itself, as stated, was four-story, 57-unit multi-family building. We got sidewalks to convey out into the convey out to the intersection where there's existing crosswalks for pedestrian access for the rest of the roadways. The parking requirements for this size building by zone are 132 spaces, and that's 132. Yes, which is what we have. So we're right at the minimum of the required parking. The stormwater system itself will be broken into two separate. It's two separate systems. I just want to make sure I'm hitting all my points here. Yep, so the existing drainage conditions. Currently, the sheet that I gave you shows in the purple area, I know it's a hard map to see, but the red square at the bottom has the yellow site arrow, and then there's a purple ring up above that to the north. That is this area up here that's flowing into this wetland spot. So that's the off-site flow that's coming onto our site. That combines with the on-site flow that works its way through the bottom, the southwest portion, and discharges off of the site via sheet flow into the Meadow Lane Road. So as part of bear with me. I know this project, but I was not planning on presenting it. So then with the post-development, what we're looking to do here, I know you probably can't see this anyway. This is the the grading and drainage design. So the on-site flow is just a traditional system. It's going to have catch basins, the roof, everything will be channeled into this lower pond that you see here. So there's an infiltration system down here that will take care of the treatment and the infiltration. And then that will go to this lower pond, which will control the amount of volume and flow rate coming off of the site. However, that whole section to the north of us is going to come into this little wetland area and hit this headwall that was previously mentioned. So we'll construct a headwall and put in an inlet or a catch basin to pick up all of the flow that's coming onto our site from the offsite area. That will be piped into this offsite detention basin, the northern basin, where it will be stored so that we can reduce the volume and the flow rate coming off of the site to make it lower than the existing condition. So the off-site and the on-site stormwater systems will be combined and are the total calculated amount of the volume coming off the site and the flow rate at any given time is lower than the existing condition. So it is improving the conditions of the site. So all of the on-site stormwater will be dealt with, will be treated as part of the required codes for Connecticut. However, the water up here is just being conveyed through the site. So it's bypassing the site, subsurface infiltration basins. So we're just moving that volume of water from the north down through the south, but we're collecting and storing it just to minimize, just to help control the volume and the flow rate. So if we just piped it out of the site, the flow rate would be too high. So we're detaining it in this pond and controlling the outfall to lower the discharge rate. And then that can be shown. You'll see that on the first page of the paper that I handed you that has the pre- and post-development peak rates of runoff on that top chart, and then the volume runoff in acre feet on the bottom chart. And if you look, the left-hand column is the five storm events that we analyzed, and then the far right-hand column is the percent reduction that we're getting for the flow rate or the volume on any given for any given storm frequency. So also included in that, the papers that I gave you, it's showing the photos of the catch basins and the pipes that are in that northern 16-acre parcel section to show how, you know, like that's being collected and discharged into this portion of our project. And then if you keep going, there's a figure four that shows the existing watershed plan. As I mentioned, that shows the offsite flow and then the onsite flow and how that's combining and where that's discharging in the same location as our proposed discharge. We did receive some comments earlier today, and I just had a chance to just briefly read those. They were minor, but I'm fully anticipating to have those all addressed by the next meeting.
This application was referred out to the town soil scientists. Unfortunately, they were delayed in providing their comments back. I did get them late this afternoon, sent them off to the applicant. However, they obviously haven't had a chance to respond to those minor comments.
Thanks, Stacy. We have had a chance to take a look at the comments. In fact, some of the comments we think we already addressed in our initial application. Just to add, and I know I want to thank Mark for coming last minute. Our the engineer that was supposed to be here tonight literally got sick this afternoon, and so he ran here to replace him. So, but we worked very closely with Stacy and with Meredith, and we actually met before we submitted the application with Kyle Haubert from CLA Engineers, your reviewing engineer, and Bob Russo, your wetland scientist, on this design. Particularly on the issue of stormwater. It's not often that you get a site to develop where the town's drainage system literally empties out onto your property without any easement or anything like that. So we've got this an unusual situation where we have to obviously develop our own site responsibly and deal with our own stormwater we're creating, but we also have to deal with the stormwater from that Cedar neighborhood to the north and all that water that's coming down off the town roads and basically depositing into the drainage outfall, which over time has become a wetland. So we think we've worked really closely with both Bob Russo and Kyle on this design, and we're confident that at the end of the day, you know, this is the best way to develop the site, but also address that existing drainage problem and make sure that the drainage going through our site is actually less after we develop it than before as it stands today. I certainly want to thank you all for your time and attention and having us here this evening. This is the night of receipt of our application. Under Connecticut law, you can't act on a wetland application at the first meeting, and we certainly acknowledge that. But in the interest of time, we would request that you make a determination on whether or not this project, as proposed, constitutes a significant impact and therefore requires a public hearing. In our opinion, it does not, and I think that's best shown in the wetland reports. You had both a functional value assessment and an impact report submitted by Mr. Liddy. In determining whether or not an activity that's proposed constitutes a significant impact, your regulations provide you guidance on that point. And a significant impact is basically defined as an activity that falls into one of seven categories. So I'd like to just review those really quickly with you and explain why we don't think we meet that threshold. The first category is an activity that involves deposition or removal of material which will or may have a substantial effect on a wetland or water course or a wetland or water course outside of the area that the activity is proposed. The second category is an activity which substantially changes a natural channel or may inhibit the natural dynamics of a water course system. The third category is an activity that substantially diminishes the natural capacity of an inland wetland or water course to provide habitat or prevent or undermine other values like preventing flooding or supplying water or assimilating waste, facilitating drainage or providing recreation or open space. The fourth category is an activity that's likely to cause or has the potential to cause substantial turbidity, siltation, or sedimentation in a wetland or water course. The fifth is an activity that causes substantial diminution of flow of a natural water course or changes in groundwater levels of a wetland or water course. The sixth is an activity which is likely to cause or has the potential to cause pollution of a wetland or water course. And the final one is an activity that destroys unique wetland or water course areas or areas that have demonstrable scientific or educational value. And I think if you look carefully at all seven of these categories, we don't rise to that level on any of those issues. In making your determination, I think you're empowered to take into account all of the facts and circumstances of this particular application. And while we do have direct impact as a result of the construction of the parking spaces we need to park this project, we think you need to consider the very small size of the wetland, the very small size of the proposed temporary and permanent impacts, the extremely limited functional value that Mr. Liddy has testified to. This is basically the drainage outfall from the town's stormwater system dumping onto our property. And then also the significant nature of previous disturbance. We basically have a man-made excavated area at the end of the outfall that's filled in with road sediment over the years. As you've heard tonight, the wetland is a drainage outfall for the entire neighborhood to the north, which dumps onto our property. This is not a pristine natural wetland. It's not providing any habitat of any value. It's choked with invasive species. It doesn't have the type of important functional value that you would look for in a typical natural wetland system. From our perspective, the limited impacts proposed to this marginal wetland are not significant in nature or scope. They don't undermine any valuable functions, and they don't rise to the threshold of an impact worthy of a finding of significant activity, an impact that requires additional scrutiny, an impact that requires a public hearing. Certainly there are projects, and I'm sure this commission has reviewed them, and there are wetlands that deserve that finding, but we don't think that's one of them tonight. Ultimately, though, the decision's yours. And whatever you decide, whether you want to have a public hearing and find a significant activity or you don't, that's your decision to make. But we'd ask you to make that decision tonight so that if there is going to be a public hearing in this matter, we can schedule it for your next meeting and properly advertise it, send notice to abutters, and then come back either way before you at your November meeting to either hold the public hearing or move forward with action on the application. I want to thank you for your attention tonight. We look forward to coming back next month, no matter how you decide. And my entire team is here and available for it. If you have any questions regarding the application, if you have any clarifications that you want, or if there's any other information that you'd like to hear from us that we haven't shared that you think would be important in your decision making. So thank you again.
I would like to clarify. So the water coming down is from another area higher up in the stream. flooding down there. It's not pooling. It's being it's soaked in, so there's no area like a vernal pool.
Yeah, so that water comes down and gets deposited out of that pipe, and then it runs and sits in this basin, which is the wetland on the north end of the property. These soils are pretty good at absorbing water, and so once it goes from this pool, it flows overland and sinks into the ground here, and eventually migrates its way overland down in this direction to the south end of the site. Our design deals with all the stormwater that we're generating off of our parking area in our building. It picks up the drainage that's coming from the neighborhood to the north. It keeps them in two separate basins. This is for the neighborhood, this basin. This is for our project, this basin. And it makes sure, we've shown in calculations, that the amount of water leaving the site after we develop this at the edge of the site is less after we develop it than it is today. So we've made the existing situation better despite the development of the site.
Okay. May I ask a question?
Of course.
Two questions. They're different. I'm going to say them both so I don't forget the second one.
That's okay.
The first question, how long does it take for wetland soils to develop? So we're saying this is a man-made wetland. That's what I'm hearing. So how long has it been a man-made wetland? And that doesn't matter. Just want to put that out to the commission. How it got there, it just matters that it is a wetland. And the second question, darn, I already forgot it.
Well, I can answer your first one.
Yeah,
I should say before I was a lawyer, I was a town planner in Norwich.
Oh, cool.
I was a town planner, I was a wetland scientist. So.
Perfect.
But Mr. Liddy is far more qualified, I'm going to let him just tell me if I'm right or not. But when soils become inundated with water, they have anaerobic conditions without oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you get is the soil itself will change and you'll get modeling in the soil. So there'll be concentrations of some metals will occur there so that when you dig an auger and you look at it, you can actually see those chemical reactions in the soil. And so that can happen over a period of years. It's not uncommon, for example, for man-made wetlands to appear in a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm.
A great example, especially in this area, are old gravel pits. So where gravel excavation cuts into the water table and you get soil hitting the water, you get those anaerobic conditions, and the soils will actually meet the requirements of hydric soils and become wetlands after the fact. Again, when the pharmacy project was developed about 15 years ago, the wetland scientists on that project, as Mr. Liddy testified, believed that this was an excavation hole that was dug by a previous owner to collect that stormwater fall. Today, that hole is now filled in with sediment and now is hydric soils. And Mr. Liddy, do you want to add anything to what I had to say?
Just one thing.
So that's a good question. I don't know. We don't know how long this drainage pipe has been doing this. It seems to be a very long time. With regards to, you know, how fast does it take to develop a wetland soil? It's hard to say. It really depends on a lot of different characteristics, specifically the soil. And what Bill alluded to was, in order to have wetland soils created, a lot of times, it's transformation of the iron and manganese, which is ubiquitous in our soils. And so when soils are saturated for a long period of time, or even on the scale of like 2 to 3 weeks during the year, the iron and manganese actually reduce and become soluble in the water, and then they can move with the water, and leaving behind the soil grain that was left there, which is actually our native soil is typically granite, so it will look like a grayish, whitish material, and once that iron and manganese is removed, it's removed forever. So even if the water goes away, it will still have that grayish appearance. So I don't know if that was too in depth.
That's good. It's helpful.
It doesn't take long to develop that hydric characteristic.
Okay, I remembered my second question, and you might be the right person for it. Maybe others want to chime in. I'm wondering, it's been really, really dry since basically Labor Day around here. So I'm assuming you've been at the site in wet times and dry times. Do you notice significant difference in the lay of the land when we're in a wet spring versus this very dry fall?
I was out here in July for mm-hmm. the first time and the only time, and you know, what's like normal rainfall anymore? You know, this past spring and last summer, we were getting floods, and now we're in drought. Mm-hmm. The year before that, we're in drought, and then the year before that, it was all flood. So from what my limited observation, it seems that this water, you know, if you get a wet year and these like 2-3 inch rain events, that water is gonna rip down that hillside, bringing with it sediment, whatever's in it. And then it go, you know, water will seek the lowest elevation. So water will move, you know, down this hill, going this way, and then deposit the sediment, which fills this up, and the next storm that might go this, you know, off to mm-hmm. the right. It's just kind of, it's gonna find its own way, but when it does that, it's within a flat area, so this water just, you know, the bottom of this hill takes the impact of that, and then the water just spreads out, kind of fans out, and infiltrates, because this is very, it's well-drained soil, but it's just getting, you know, clogged with this water, that stormwater. So wet years, you know, it will look like, you know, there's a lot of water coming through there. Dry years, you know, it won't look that way. But mm-hmm. it's very flashy, I imagine, and it's really subject to the storm events.
Okay.
So there's no constant water flow. It's only when we have storms and it's coming down the street and empties
right.
into the
yeah,
lowest point from the drainage.
A water table type wetland where you have like the very well-defined wetland. This
right.
is just a feature that has formed when, you know, the water just dumps there. And it can sit, you know, think about the wintertime when it's not frozen. You know, the water will just come down and sit there. It's got nowhere to go because it's so flat. And then over time, it can create that hydric soil appearance. And to your point, you know, it's not like a pool of where you'll get, you know, I don't even think you'll get mosquitoes breeding in this area, because it's just, the water infiltrates and settles out and dries out.
If I could just add one thing to that, and I think, you know, Mark talked about it, and I think he provided you a copy of his pre- and post-development flows. You know, what's going to happen at the end of the day is water's going to come out of that outflow into the wetland, and it's going to come to this this wall here where we have an inlet. And so that is going to get picked up, and rather than just hitting and this pouring over the site, it's going to get picked up, and it's going to be routed to this off-site detention. Call it off-site detention. It's on our site, but it's dealing with the off-site flow. But we've shown and modeled that we can deal with it for the big rainstorms and the smaller rainstorms. And we have a requirement under the 2024 Stormwater Manual to do that, but that should give some level of comfort to the commission that we have designed this project to not only deal with our flow in this basin, but to deal with this flashy flow from the neighborhood above us in this basin. Most important thing, I think, at the end of the day, what does it for me is our calculations show that after this project is done, the amount of water, sea floor water coming out of the south end of the site is lower than it is today. So our work here, even though we're developing the site, even though we're adding impervious surface, our work is actually improving this drainage issue.
So our town experts haven't weighed in on this?
They did, however, his comments were received late this afternoon, mm-hmm. so they haven't had a chance to, the applicant hasn't had a chance to respond to them.
Mm, okay.
I think the majority of the comments that we've got are regarding the drainage systems that we've put in. There was a comment. There was one comment regarding the wetland delineation. And Tom, do you want to address that specifically? I think Mr. Russo, through Mr. Hopper, remarked that he had seen Phragmites, those outside of our wetland delineation. And I think Mr. Liddy talked a little bit about that, but maybe you could just talk a little bit more about why someone might find a Phragmite, which is typically associated as a wetland plant, outside of a delineated area.
Sure. Thank you. Yes. So I don't know how familiar you are with Phragmites. It's one of the nastier, more aggressive, invasive plant species. And so this, what I was describing as this wetland, is the water coming in, hits the bottom of the slope, and fans out, right? So where this hits the slope first, that's where the brunt of the water is going, and that's where most of the water is infiltrating and changing that soil to look like a hydric soil. So as you get further away from that area that it hits first, you know, there's less water reaching the outer limit of that wetland boundary line. Mm-hmm. But the vegetation can still, it's still wet enough to get some, you know, facultative species. But in the case of Phragmites, you know, it can send roots, you know, 20 feet somewhere to get more water. So it's not uncommon to see Phragmites, you know, upgrading of a wetland line, or in this case, it's actually further away from that discharge point. But when I was out there delineating, you really have to dig down and look for the soils, because Phragmites is just not a reliable indicator. You'll see it growing up in sidewalks and roadways and all those sorts of places. So if it was something a little more you know, native or like a wetter species, like if we had buttonbush or cattails, for example, outside that wetland line, you know, that would be a case for, okay, let's relook at this wetland line. Do we need to make some modifications? But in this case, in this site, and looking at the soils, and I know, I don't want to speak for Mr. Russo, but I know he's an excellent soil scientist, so I assume he looked at the same things that I did. And, you know, it, in this situation, especially where it's kind of altered and you're getting that disturbance from the flooding, it's not uncommon to get really invasive species, even if they are wetlands, you know, outside the wetland boundary, because it might still be wet enough to support that plant community.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. I don't know how the rest of you feel, but I personally would like to do a site walk.
Okay, before we talk about a site walk, mm-hmm. we do have to make a determination if this is a significant impact.
Do we? We have to do that tonight. Or is it just the request of the applicant?
Well, do they have to do it tonight? We have to, because we would have to schedule it for a public hearing.
And by law, you only have so many days from the date of receipt to make decisions.
And that was my next question, or to bring out, was in this day and age, I'm sorry, I believe we should have a public hearing. I don't know how the rest of you people feel, but like I say, with everything that's going on today, they could hang us out to dry, saying, you never bothered to let us know or anything of that nature. I mean, I think we personally give them the opportunity to make comment or whatever. That's how I feel.
So you believe it's a significant activity?
Just sitting here and listening. Yes, I do, you know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a wetland, you know, water involved in that and all that stuff.
If I could just interject for a second, we certainly would be glad to have anybody out for a site walk if you choose to at the proper time to talk about that. I would also note that your regulations allow you to hold a public hearing for another reason. And so there is a third choice. You don't have to say no public hearing or yes public hearing for significant activity. You can also hold a public hearing in what's called the public interest. So you might say, listen, this wetland is very small. The amount of disturbance doesn't seem to meet the threshold under our regulations as a significant activity. But we could still hold a public hearing to address Mr. Obde's concern about neighbors, just being transparent. You can say, we'd like to have a public hearing at the November meeting in the public interest. You're empowered to do that by the statute. Uh-huh. And that may be a more appropriate decision than sort of saying, I'm really concerned about the neighbors, so I'm going to try to force a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
It's a catch-all, and it doesn't trigger the significant impact, but it does allow people to have notice of it and come uh-huh. and speak on the issue.
Right.
Just as an option, I want to make sure you have all the options in front of you.
Yeah.
I would say, I'm not comfortable making a decision if it's significant impact or not without seeing it. And I understand there are dates that we need to keep in mind. That would have me err on the side of it's significant. We've only heard one side of the story. We haven't had our town tell us their professional opinion, so it's an important factor, I think, just to take a look and get a sense of the neighborhood. Not the neighborhood, the wetland neighborhood, I mean, really looking at the site. So I'm a little uncomfortable making a decision on it tonight at this moment.
I guess all I would say is if you have any thought of having a public hearing, I think it should be scheduled tonight, and you can decide whether you want to do it in terms of a significant activity or in the public interest, which I think may be appropriate under the circumstances. What I would ask you not to do is delay a decision at all, and then we wait until the November meeting, and then you say, yeah, we want a public hearing, want to do it in December. That would be problematic for us. So I would ask that if you feel like that you want to have a public hearing, at least call one in the public interest for the November meeting. And we could still do a site walk between now and then, too, to give you the chance. Mm-hmm. And then everybody has their say, and you can still ask questions about the project and things that you may see at your site walk as well.
So really the public hearing, the why, doesn't necessarily matter. We're still going to do it. We'll cover all of the same topic areas. People have the same chance to weigh in.
Exactly. In my opinion, I don't think this meets your threshold for a significant activity, but it would be improper for me to suggest that you couldn't have a public hearing just in the public interest. And so that's why I raised that issue. I think it was directly to the acting chairman's point, where he's just worried about how it might be perceived. And I think the public hearing and the public interest is in this Connecticut wetland statute simply for that reason. Is sometimes there may be a project that the commission feels we really want to make sure the community has a chance to weigh in, even if it doesn't meet our technical definition of significant impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From my standpoint, I can't tell. I mean, it looks like you're really going to change a man-made, probably scrubby, invasive mess and make it better. And I hear that, but without seeing it, I
can appreciate that. I can completely appreciate that position. And we'd be happy to have you out there and to show you it so you can see it with your own eyes up close.
Anybody else have a comment?
Sure. So I'm on the other side of the fence with this. I don't necessarily see it as a significant impact, but that being said, I do like the idea of having the public hearing at the next meeting. Because as you mentioned earlier, there is no way to say yay or nay on this as an entirety. Anyhow, no matter what, we would still have to have this brought before the committee at the next month's meeting too.
Right, you can't vote tonight. That's
exactly.
That's clear. Right.
This is just to say.
Yeah.
And at which point it could also be shut down. I mean, between then and there, you had also mentioned, we could have that site walk.
You can.
That way, anybody that's on the panel can feel more at ease as necessary.
Yeah. I mean, you could schedule tonight a public hearing for your November meeting in the public interest, and then also say we'd like to do a site walk next week sometime. The only thing I would say is if you do schedule a public hearing and you have a site walk, your chairman or your staff should really control what's said.
Mm-hmm.
There really can be no discussion at a site walk where it's a pending public hearing because of ex parte rules. So it's really, this is the wetland, and you should take notes and write questions that you want to ask, but you ask them at the November meeting. You don't ask them in the field.
That's typical of a site walk regardless.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys have done it before. Yeah. I have to protect the integrity of your actions too. Yep.
Normally, if we have a quota on a site walk, we can call a meeting at that time.
Sure.
And stuff. So, but we can set that off to the side, I believe. Can we not? If we have a quota at the site walk, do we have to consider it as a meeting? We do have to. Okay. So
you just can't talk about the merits of the application if you have a public hearing pending.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And just to be clear, at the public hearing, we wouldn't go down a rabbit hole of people. They can't speak to the project. These, we're not seeking comments on housing or development. It's just on the impacts of the wetlands.
It's going to just be on wetland issues. Yeah. It has to be on the jurisdiction.
That's
that
right.
You
it's
have.
All we have. Exactly.
The Planning and Zoning Commission can talk about other issues. Mm-hmm. And often I deal with these in towns all the time. Mm-hmm. Often if somebody gets up and wants to talk about it, you know, I would suggest that the commission could say, hey, those are all legitimate concerns, but you need to save those for the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Any other comments?
Well, I think we should do a site visit and do the transparency thing for the next visit. Okay. For the next meeting.
All right, now we pick a date for the site walk.
So we will have to.
Yeah, just it would be a motion for a public hearing in the public interest for the November meeting, and then a motion for a site walk at your leisure, and we'll accommodate your schedule.
So we'll have to make two motions. The first one will be to set a public hearing. So
that will be for the November meeting, right?
Correct.
The 21st or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. November 21st.
Yeah.
And that will be to set a public hearing in the public interest.
Yeah.
So who wants to make that motion?
Well, in that case, I'd like to make a motion to have a public hearing in the public interest for the November meeting.
Okay.
I second it.
The motion's been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
So moved.
And then the second part of that is that we will make a motion at this point to schedule a site walk on the property.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have a calendar, so.
Well, you got Saturday, November 2nd, 9th, or 16th before the meeting.
All right. I won't be here. So.
So our next meeting is the 21st.
Uh-huh.
So we could do, typically you guys choose the Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Saturday the 2nd, Saturday the 9th, or Saturday the 16th.
Any day is fine with me.
If anybody's open to this, I can get to it before it gets any colder.
I don't have my calendar, and I have a little kind of a busy next couple weeks, but I, you said it, and I'll try to come. Is this anything we can see from the road if we did a drive-by?
You really would have to get into the property. Mm-hmm. If you give us a little bit of time, we can clear an area to get back there, and because I know it's a little overgrown right now.
I was just going to say the town
and then we
engineer.
Could accommodate you if through your staff. You probably shouldn't talk to us directly, but if you wanted to talk to Stacy and say, if you can't make it, for example, Mr. Clare, you know, if you could say, hey, I'm hoping to get out there on a Thursday, and we can make sure that, you know, it's properly marked for you so you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
But just give us a little bit of time to do that, because we have to get out in the field to get that done.
Thank you.
Anybody got a particular date?
You got those date. What did you say?
The 2nd, the 9th, and the 16th.
Okay, so the 2nd, you're not going to
I'm
be
not
going
to be here. I'll be coming back from Florida for my granddaughter's wedding.
If we move on to the 9th?
That's fine with me.
Sure.
Okay.
Do my best.
Okay.
All right, so we'll make a motion to set a public hearing for November the 9th at...
Nope, November 9th will just be the site walk. 21st will be the public hearing.
Sorry. Sorry, my bad.
For the record.
So this will be a motion to set the site walk for November 9th at...
You do about 10 o'clock?
10 a.m.
10 o'clock will be fine.
So who would like to make that motion?
I make a motion that we do a site walk on Saturday, November 9th at 10 a.m.
Second.
Second.
Motion's been made. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Thank you so much. We'll see you on November 9th.
Thank you.
I want a raise. And when I see Doug, tell him I'm going to. All right. No correspondence?
None.
Other business?
None.
Executive session?
None.
One last motion.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second it.
Motion made and second adjourned.
The 1-2 punch.
All in favor?
Aye.
I was looking at my calendar. I let you down that last one.